Welcome to B2B, Boots to Books, the show where we explore the journeys of veterans and military-connected students as they navigate their paths from service to the classroom and beyond. I'm Dustin Abrego.
And I'm Rebecca Allen, your hosts. Each week, we'll dive into powerful stories of resilience, determination, and success.
Whether you're a veteran yourself, a military family member, or simply inspired by the strength of those who serve, you're in the right place.
Let's turn the page and start this incredible journey together.
Hello, and welcome back to B2B. We are again joined by...
Roy Fernandez.
Dylan.
All right. And Rebecca.
And Rebecca.
Okay.
Right. I'm the only one to use the last
name. So we literally did a cut for content aspects, and then we're going to get back into it. So we were, again, focusing and talking about... So this is part two. Please listen to part one. Otherwise, you're going to be super lost. Talking about reintegration... Dylan, you had a really great point and we had to cut.
I don't know
if you can pick it back up.
Yeah, yeah, I can. I'm kept in my head.
Oh, yeah, locked in.
Well, I won't ever forget this. We had talked about this before where people, they come across at a time and a point in their life where they either progress as a person or they regress. We talked about it in the lobby, not in the podcast, obviously. But this was one of those points for me whenever I was in that U-Haul and my little brother, he asked, what are you going to do? And I was scared. I was lost. I literally did not know what I was going to do. And it wasn't the fact that I didn't have a job. It wasn't the fact that whenever I got out, I literally had probably 10 bucks to my name. I was worried that I didn't have anything to do.
What is your purpose?
What is my purpose? My purpose was to get up and serve my country. My purpose was to get up and be the best artilleryman that I could be. That was my job in the Army for everyone on listening to the podcast. My job was to blow stuff up and to protect the infantry elements on the ground and to train and to be ready to deploy at any time in this nation's history, foreign and domestic. And whenever I was driving that U-Haul driving home, mind you, any experience I had before the military, I was in high school living in the impoverished area of Dallas, Texas, Fort Worth, Texas, and I knew nothing else. I literally knew nothing else but the military and Texas. That's it. I didn't know anything else. So when we got back to Texas, because that's where I first went when I got out, I didn't know where else to go. I didn't have any money to go anywhere else. I barely made it back to Texas by that. I had like 10 bucks in my bank account. I remember we went to sleep and me, my wife, and my son were able to live in this one-bedroom shack. Her grandparents had this property and they were like, you can live in what used to be a pool house, and they turned into like a stay at home house or something. One bedroom. Our son stayed in the washing machine room because that's the only place that we could put him. It was literally a shack, a one bedroom shack. And I woke up. I remember the day after I woke up, I had spent the entire night getting everything from the U-Haul, parked the U-Haul, drove back, went to sleep, woke up at 5:30 in the morning on the dot without even my alarm. And I hopped out of bed and I went to go put on my PTs. I was scared. I was like, oh. And then my wife, wait, shit, what are you doing? I was like, I'm going to be late for PT. Because usually I try to get to PT early. That way I wasn't late. So I'm putting on my PTs. And then she's like, you're not. And I was like, what do I do today? Like, really, I was like, I don't want to go looking for a job today. I didn't know what I was going to do. And it was at that point that I realized that I needed to figure out what to do. But that just made me even more depressed because at this point I was born in 98. You can do the math on that.
When is my birthday?
And it goes back to Roy's point where, you know, you feel like you did so much. Because I came from such a bad area. I came from such a bad background. You know, my father wasn't nothing. And my mom did her best to become what she was. But she still, you know, she wasn't no rich person. But I love her for it. She's a hardworking woman. But you know what I'm saying? But I did all this and now I'm back to square one. I'm behind square one. I don't own anything. I don't own my car. I don't own the house that we live in. And the house we live in is a one-bedroom shack in Cleburne, Texas, out in the middle of nowhere.
And now you own yourself again.
Yes.
Because before you all didn't.
Yep.
And I'm not making an ethical point. It's like everything was planned out. Everything was all this stuff, right?
And now
you, it's like...
Now you got to figure
there was a way to tie your boots. It's left over right.
There's literally every little thing, every inch of your life, there's a way that you wanted to be held to a certain standard and do. Mm-hmm. You always focus on doing that. So I was in Japan for about 2.5 years. It was a bit of a culture shock going from the United States. I was in Camp Lejeune in North Carolina with a combat logistics regiment 27, and I got orders to go out to Japan. So I got assigned to VMGR 152, C-130 squadron. I had no idea what I was doing. I just got a bunch of certifications and qualifications in my role in logistics. That's what I did when I was in the service. And the unit was moving from Okinawa, Japan, up to Iwakuni. So they were moving islands, literally the whole islands, while continuing to support the Marine Expeditionary Force. It was just everything that the Marine Corps does in the mm-hmm. Asian Pacific. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot going on there. But same things, like when I was getting out, I was EASing, and I had, thankfully, 30 days of leave saved up. I didn't take a lot of time off when I was in. So me and my buddy were able to, my groomsman, I'm his best man, we were able to set it up to where we both got out at the exact same time. We were both out on a flight out of Japan to California, and then we got put up in these barracks. You want to talk about a bad taste in your mouth? The last week of my Marine Corps experience was in the worst barracks that I have ever seen, been a part of. Mold, disgusting, linen, everything was just awful. Thankfully, I had buddies that had gotten out before me that mm-hmm. lived in California, that I was able to set up a thing where me and my buddy that were in that same room, mm-hmm. we just stayed the night at my buddy's house.
Already. So
I'm like, there's no way, like, this mm-hmm. was filthy. It mm-hmm. was just right. the worst mm-hmm. thing ever. So we were able to stay at my buddy's place for that week while getting all of our EAS paperwork out. Mm-hmm. My buddy got stuck with 24-hour duty.
No.
Oh, no.
He was so mad. He was so
sorry.
Mad.
Sorry, amateur civilian here. What the heck we're all knowing about. Sorry.
So the 24-hour duty is when you essentially are assigned to pretty much be kind of the police of the barracks mm-hmm. that day. So it's a 24-hour stint.
It's the RA on duty.
Oh, okay. Right. Thanks
you,
for
you
the
guys,
reference.
You got your barracks, your battalion, your division. It's just staff duty in the Army.
So you just stay there for a full 24 hours. You just make sure no one's doing things that are too crazy.
See the shadow people in the corner at 3:00 in the morning.
Right. Yeah.
But you have to be awake.
You have to be mm-hmm. awake.
You cannot go to sleep.
You cannot go to sleep.
Very smart.
So what I would do when I had a duty was I would tell my senior that, hey, I'm going to go and make rounds around the barracks just to... Mm-hmm. You know, patrol, make sure everything's good. Took a nap in my room.
I just drank bangs the 15, entire time.
15 minutes, then be up and going. But anyways, that was that experience kind of leaving at the very end. So I was like, oh, it's a terrible taste in my mouth. Like, you didn't have to give me the best barracks in the world, but you didn't have to give me the worst that exists. Because this was probably like barracks that were established in like the 60s.
Mm. Ew.
And it was bad.
Is that Vietnam final era chance barracks? To try and get that that VA connected rating?
Right, right. Once that was done, me and my buddy, we fly different ways. He's to Boston, I'm to Detroit.
Oh my God.
And that's it. And now I thought going to Japan was a culture shock.
But you were in North Carolina.
I was in North Carolina my first year in the fleet when I got out of the schoolhouse.
Gotcha.
Then I got assigned orders to Japan for about 2.5 years.
Okay.
We don't stay in one spot.
No, I thought he was living in North Carolina, and I was really confused. I was like, wait, why are you going to Japan?
But once I, left my buddy, mm-hmm. that was like the last bit, and it was it. It's like you go every day from waking up with those guys doing everything, your job, PT, working out at night. He was my roommate for pretty much 2 years. Every single day we were hanging out together. We were working out after. We got an opportunity to go out, enjoy the nightlife, whatever it is. We were always hanging out. Good group of guys. And then all of a sudden, it's gone.
Gone. Yep.
So now you're trying to figure out, well, what do I do? I have no idea. Same thing. I had no idea what I was doing. So I thought, okay, well, time to use the GI Bill benefits, right? Okay, maybe what I want to do is the civilian version of what I was doing in the service. Mm-hmm. I was an embarkation specialist, so it was logistics. Mm-hmm. So I was like, all right, well, supply chain management. That's what I'll just go and do. Mm-hmm. It's not what I wanted to do. It's just what I thought I wanted to do because it's what I did for 4 years.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Just wasn't the way. But one of the weirdest experiences I had, I haven't had it to this day since then, but it was, I remember I was eating a bowl of cereal And this was in that 30-day window where I had 30 days of leave. So I had 30 days of vacation saved up. So I got out a month early.
Lucky.
And I still got paid like twice on the 1st and 15th. And then all of a sudden, I'm eating a cereal and I lose all feeling in my hand with the spoon. And I'm looking at the spoon, looking at the cereal and the milk. I'm like, why don't I feel anything in my hand? The weirdest thing I ever experienced in my life. I couldn't explain it. And I just still to this day try to like, was that just like an extreme culture shock to my nervous system, body, whatever it is? I don't know what it was. I haven't had it since, thankfully. Sure. But it was just one of those like weird situations.
Just
that happened
a mini stroke. It's okay.
Right. Whatever it is. I just carried on and with my day. And then I always
ibuprofen,
share.
Change your socks. Drink water.
Every now and then when I have conversations with this, and we talk about it, I'll bring it up. And I'm like, it's just one thing that for some reason happened to me. And I've always remembered it and I've stuck with it. And I've always told people like, hey, this is something that happened. It was weird. Yeah. Doubt it happens to everybody. Probably doesn't even happen to anybody. Probably it was just me. I don't know. But here I am.
There's always that moment when you have that really, really big life change where you just kind of disassociate from everything that you're doing in the moment. And then you are conscious of the fact that you have done that. So I think you'd probably be surprised at how many people have had similar experiences. Maybe not like I can't feel the spoon in my hand kind of thing, but there's probably a lot of people that have similar experiences with that.
Well, I mean, it all floods and hits you. That's the time frame where you're like actually sitting with your thoughts. Like it's times in the shower and other, like if you're just sitting and like there's no one else around and realizing all of it is like your brain's like, oh wait, you're here now. And you're like, I'm where?
Yep.
It's like if you try to mess with people, it's like you realize now that your tongue and your mouth is uncomfortable and now you're like, oh, now I'm aware of breathing and I'm like, I have to focus on it. And it's like, stop it. Like,
and then it's like the flooding. It's almost, I would equate it to like the stages of grief. A lot of veterans get stuck in that depression stage. I was in it for 3-4 years. It got real dark. I was not okay. Yeah. You were going to say something.
What you were just talking about, that's like, I feel like for the longest time I said that mental things, it's not a thing. One thing I always like remembered from my drill instructor was you poke a body and if it does not have a brain on it, that body's not going to feel a thing. You can do whatever you want to that body. You can kick it, you can hit it, you can punch it, you can slice it, cut it, whatever. The body's not going to move. You attach a brain to it, all of a sudden it's got feeling. Right? So we were always taught mental strengthness to like always like numb the pain, mission first. This is critical. This is what you're doing. This is your job.
You have to be able to respond. Like it makes sense in what you do it, but when like that is your existence.
Right.
And like
it's good for the time.
Correct.
But when you get out and you have done nothing but been on a stress response for more than, 4 years or 13?
Seven.
Four, you know, it kind of hits you different whenever you come back and now everything's calm. Oh my God, there's no instant. What am I going to do? And then next thing you know, you're always on edge. You always got to be. I still to this day, if I'm late to something, I beat myself up. I think we've talked
about that.
I beat myself up all the time. If I'm late to something, even if I am 1 minute late, I freak out. I remember when I was a teenager, going to the grocery store was easy. You know, walk in there. Going to the grocery store now is a nightmare. If I don't take my meds that the VA gives me, I will have a panic attack. And it's not the fact that I'm worried about myself. It's the fact that whenever I go to the grocery store, I go with my wife and my son. And if something were to break out, which 9 times out of 10, nothing's going to happen. But if something were, I got to focus on saving myself and saving them. And
you're processing those thoughts, which is...
It happens.
A learned experience, right, of what's occurred.
And it's happening 24/7. You're always, imagine going down the aisle to get some milk, and in your head, you're thinking about 5 different scenarios
tactical
that could happen right then and there. Every veteran can attest to this. How many times do y'all go and you're like, okay, what's my quickest exit out of this building? It happens all the time. And living like that, whenever you get out and you have no purpose, you have no mission anymore, it eats away at you. And next thing you know, you're in the VA doing group therapy with a bunch of other veterans, and all you're hearing is people crying about it, and you're realizing this group therapy isn't working for you. And then that just makes you more depressed, something that the VA and the military doesn't address well. The VA just throws pills at it. It does. That's all it does. They just throw pills at you. And the group therapy doesn't work. And then the single therapy, it's like a 15-minute session. They talk, and then you get out. If I hadn't gotten back into sports, if I hadn't started coaching again.
Purpose.
If I hadn't found a purpose, if I hadn't started going back to school, I would hate to think about how my son would have had to hold that folded flag.
Sure.
And everyone knows what that means.
Sure.
It got that dark for me. And it's, I'm getting choked up. I'm sorry. It's just, it's something that.
Don't apologize to me again, but I hear you.
It's something that all veterans, it's not just me. Yeah, it's something that all veterans deal with. I don't know if these two have gotten to the point that I got.
Sure.
But whenever you go your entire existence up until that point of you're just a object in a bigger machine, and now you are no longer an object needed, it really displaces you. It really takes away from who you are as a person. And I don't think people understand how demoralizing and how horrible that is. And that's why I'm always advocating for reintegration for veterans. Like I always try to put on the smile and talk to veterans who come through the veteran building. That's why I'm always, you know, chatting it up, and y'all are always telling me, hey, don't be so loud and everything. Because I know that there are veterans that were or are still in the spot that I was at. And because I know how that feels, I don't want them to feel that.
Sure.
I don't want to. There should be no reason why a person who put their life on hold to defend your nation, whether it's papers or going to the front lines, should ever have to feel like that. Ever. And just like you said, you're getting out and they put you in the worst barracks, man. Threw you away like trash.
Right.
You know.
I know a lot of veterans too probably feel ashamed, you know, of their feelings and what they're thinking about and their mental state and everything. And like you said, if you don't have some type of words of encouragement or that interaction that you have with people, sometimes it can be difficult because they're trying to suppress those emotions just as much as anyone else.
All the
and
veterans
that's not
out
the
there,
right thing to do.
Don't do that.
Like I said,
talk about it.
That's your training. That's whatever. I mean, to make stereotypes about men as well, like layering that on, the amount of people in my office that I'm like, hey, you're doing a good job. And they start crying. Because, like, there's just a lot going on. And, like, that's okay. And it's very interesting to me the amount of times that I've had people that will, the just getting out aspect, I understand you had to do that. Not judging, not being anything like that, right? But then, like, are here and they're like, these kids in my classes, they'll got soft hands and I can't whatever about stuff. And I was like, that's really weird. And it seems like you can't handle your emotions. I'm not going to say that out loud because that's going to go over well, right? But like, but like trying to navigate that of like,
you're what, not wrong though.
As someone on the outside, I almost wish there wasn't a class that you had when you got out, because I think that gave you a false sense of this will teach me how to like everything. And I was like, bro, there's no class for people that weren't in. It's just like, we all kind of were like stumbling around, spending way too much money at school and like, and people were still not doing it. So like
a false sense of security.
Yeah. You kind of are at the same place as other people. It might not feel like it.
Yeah.
They just probably got better at lying about it than you all did. You didn't have a choice. And they're all just like, I'm whatever. And I was like, I see you make money, but like, you're not fun to be around.
Right.
And I know, I know people like that. Right. So I cut you off, bro. I apologize.
You know, when you're in class, I'm sure everyone's had this where like the professor's asking and like someone has a question and they're just like, if you, someone has that question 9 times out of 10, probably 10 times 10, someone else has that question too.
Yeah.
So, when you're a veteran and you're struggling through things, don't think that you're the only person that's ever struggled.
Yeah.
You're not. I promise you right now. You know, and I felt like that too, where it was like, I'm the only one that's kind of going through. So I always suppressed my emotions. And like, sometimes that was some a challenge that I always had with my wife, even though I try to communicate as much as possible. But I would always think that like a lot of emotions like depression, anxiety, and other things like that, like it was just a construct of your brain and it wasn't literally, it wasn't an actual thing. And it wasn't until several years of integrating with my wife about these conversations of opening up and recognizing that actually, yes, these are a real thing. I've just suppressed them for so many years because that's what we were trained to do.
That is one thing. So in our first part, you had mentioned having, you know, life changes, having job changes, things like that. And trying to navigate that and trying to stay strong, especially for your wife, in front of your wife, in front of your family. Dylan, you mentioned, yeah, same thing. I've been in the same boat too. I know probably almost every veteran I've met has been in the same boat, whether it's been after they got out and trying to understand reintegration or if there's a job loss, job change, anything like that. Mm. I think the really important part is you are not alone in that. Like,
yes.
There are so many of us, and even civilians, like
yes.
Everyone at some point is going to have that struggle, is going to have that feeling of, I'm in my darkest moment. I'm going through this massive change. This is not where I thought. I'm back. I'm 10 steps back from step one at this point. So I think it's really important, especially for those who are listening right now.
Yes.
You are not going through this on your own. You're not the only one to have gone through this.
You're not alone.
Not to diminish what you're going through, but there are others who have been through something similar and who are there to provide that assistance. So
if I could give any piece of advice to to any veteran, because it's been about reintegration and we talked about, you know, the bads, I want to put some good out there. And if I could give any advice to any veteran that's going to this campus right now, who genuinely they just don't know, you know, hey, I don't know how to reintegrate. I just can't do good. I couldn't do good with just society in general. Just find your purpose, find your mission. Me, I had to find my mission again. And I say that as a stereotypical term, but find your mission again. You know, it might not be, you know, say if you're infantry, your mission might not be taking out the bad guy anymore, but find your mission that you can apply to. My mission was coaching and becoming a teacher. You know, one is a long term and one I can do right now because I was already certified coach in powerlifting. And I also coach boxing out of Team Glass Boxing here in Lansing. You know, go visit if you can.
not an ad.
But I just go find your mission. Go find that. That is my piece of advice. Get out there, whatever it could be. I mean, hell, it could be running a mile a day. I know that sounds horrible, but it's something. Just go find your mission. That is my advice. If you're a mission-oriented person like myself, go find something that you can press forward to.
I think if you're in your early stages of reintegration too, I think it's very important to find other veterans within the community, whether if it's at a VFW, Legion, even if you're a student here, come to at least the Center for the Veterans, because we operate on a different wavelength. I have like 3 to 4 different groups of friends. I have friends that I worked with at an organization. I have friends that speak Spanish and I'm in a group with that friends. And then I have the group of veteran friends. And each of those groups operates differently, in my opinion. But the one that I still naturally gravitate to the most and I feel like can be myself the most, honestly, is still with the veterans, because we have gone through that service together. That is something that you can never take away from you, and that it's a hardship that you all went through together and you understand it.
Trauma bonded.
Right.
Yes.
Exactly. So if you're in the early stages of getting, you know, you just got out and you're trying to figure things out, find other veterans.
Yep.
Have those conversations with them, bond with each other, because they may have a great resource for you that you never even thought of. And then you start talking, conversation, one thing leads to another. Next thing you know, you may be doing something in welding that you never thought was going to be a thing. That's going to be a very productive career for you. You could be a truck driver, an operator. You can do anything, but you have to get in, you have to have those conversations and network with veterans, because it's so beneficial, honestly, in my opinion.
Yeah. I'm never going to get it. And like, that's okay. And I recognize that. Like, I'm not going to sign up for the service or do any of this stuff. I know I'm never going to get it. And like, I know I ask a lot of questions, but I want to make sure I understand. I know I'll never actually fully understand. That's okay with me. Right. But for those people, you just need them to get it. And when you're like getting back out or just meeting with things, you just need your people to just get it sometimes, you know?
And if you're a civilian listening, don't be scared to ask questions. Obviously, don't ask the, don't ask the dumb question. Have you killed anybody?
Right.
Like, but ask questions and, you know, we will answer. We will answer. 9 times out of 10, most veterans are itching to answer your questions, because we get a lot of people that really don't know. And we would rather you know than go up and answer those dumb questions. Just ask. Most of us, I promise, most of us are nice. There are a few out there, but most of us are nice.
Cool. Dylan, Roy, thanks for hanging out with us.
Yeah, thank you guys.
Anytime. Yeah, thanks for having us. Up. It was great. Yeah.
Rock
maybe,
on.
Maybe we should do this again.
Yeah, so, for sure.
Yes.
Cool. Make sure to check out part one. And reminder that you're not alone. There's plenty of resources in the local area here in Lansing if you're listening, and or stop by the Center for Veteran and Family Studies. So, thanks so much. You've been listening to B2B, Boots to Books.
Thank you for joining us on this journey through the inspiring stories of veterans and military-connected students.
If you've enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, leave a review, and share it with your community.
We'd love to hear from you, so connect with us on social media or take a listen to previous episodes at lccconnect.com or your favorite streaming platform.
Remember, every story is a step forward.
And together, we can build a bridge from boots to books.
Until next time, stay strong.
And keep moving forward.